He's a celebrity chef who began his TV career in 1991, best known for his appearances on Ready Steady Cook, Can't Cook, Won't Cook, as well as many other shows, including James Martin's Saturday Morning. He has a name made for show business. He's also one of the nicest guys on the telly, here to give us Christmas tips on achieving culinary triumphs and averting disasters over the festive period. My guest this morning is Tony Tobin. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Not bad at all. I think we all knew you were there, really. Thank you for joining me on the line. Since I spoke to you, I think it was about last year, Tony, you started a new venture, haven't you? Ranmore at Reigate Heath. Tell us how that came about.
Okay. Well, actually, after closing the dining room, I kind of took a couple of months off and couldn't really decide what I wanted to do. So I was doing quite a lot of private cooking people's houses and dinner parties, functions, all that sort of stuff. And it was a particular dinner party where one of the guests was somebody from the club and just said, actually, Tony, got a little idea. We'd love to have a cup of tea with you. And so I came to this lovely little club, Reigate Heath Golf Club, and which just sits in the most beautiful spot in Surrey. It's got the most amazing views. And there's a room above the club bar, which they use for their functions, which is absolutely stunning. It's just surrounded by windows and the views are amazing. And so yeah, we had a little chat and we came to agreement. So I turn it into a restaurant every Thursday, Friday and Saturday evening and Sunday lunch.
And you don't sort of specifically work for the club, basically you work with the club. That's the whole idea. It's
work alongside the club. Yeah, so I look after their catering, and in return for that I get to use that room as a restaurant. It's not a restaurant, it's a room, but we create this illusion. So when you come in, it looks absolutely gorgeous. It looks like this really lovely, cozy restaurant in the winter. And in the summer, it's this restaurant with the most amazing views. So from out of the restaurant window, I can see Leith Hill, I guess Box Hill. And then in between those two, there's a big flat bit on the horizon with a little steeple in the middle. And that's Ranmore Common. And that's why I named my restaurant Ranmore at Reigate Heath, because it's what I see when I look out.
You're absolutely right. The clubhouse, the views are absolutely stunning.
Stunning. Now, and I've got a windmill.
Somebody always needs a windmill, don't they?
Exactly.
Ranmore at Reigate Heath, it opened to members at the end of June, didn't it? It's now open to non-members as well, is that right?
It is, yeah. We got it. We had to get that floor licensed.
And what is it that you offer as a dining experience to people?
Well, we A very small a la carte menu, choice of five starters, five mains, five desserts. Food very similar to what I was doing at the dining room. If I think it's a little bit better, if I'm honest. The rest of has obviously done me good. But yeah, that's what we offer. It's a very, very small room, very pretty, very relaxed atmosphere, full of old dining room customers. You know, friends and old regulars. You know, it's going so well. It's not very big. It's only 40 seats. The dining room was 95. You know, there's just me and another chef that helps me with Ranmore, and then I've got another couple of chefs that help me do the all the club catering.
I've had a look actually at the well, you were talking about the a la carte menu. What I liked there, you've got your seared scallops, which I love.
That on. Customers wouldn't come if I didn't have my scallops dish on.
I know, and you've got your Thai potato croquettes and a mango salsa. And what I love is that signature feel for fusion dishes is still that common thread that we all know you for.
Yes, it is, and you know, and people, that's one of the first questions I get asked on the phone. Oh, we found you. We wondered where you were, whether you were going to do something else. And that's like, can we book a table? And by the way, is the scallops on?
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And your Christmas lunch menu is very, very competitive as well. You've got three mouth-watering courses. I really liked, again, that note, the rusted butternut squash soup with the red Thai curry oil. It's a really nice little extra. And
it's a really little twist on a classic. You know, this time of year, the butternut squash is great, but it really lends itself to spicing.
I tell you what I saw also later on is that gin marinated salmon pink grapefruit cardamom gel elderflower tonic jelly. That gin vibe is really of the moment as well.
It is. I mean, I'd had a gin and tonic list at the dining room for about 12 years. probably one of the first restaurants in Surrey to do it, because I'm a massive gin fan. And I've got a little copper still at home that I bought from Italy. And I attempt making it, but I'm rubbish at making gin. But I'm very good at drinking it.
Very good at very good at mixing it. I think that's, yeah. I think that's the right way to go, to be perfectly honest. The menu changes every month, doesn't it, Tony? How much?
Yeah, every 4 to 6 weeks, and kind of a couple of dishes come off, a couple go back on. We don't do a complete change, so the menu's evolving all the time. And as we go through the seasons, and we pick up different flavours, the most common thing that people have said to me actually since being here said, what we love about your food, Tony, is your detail to the flavours on the plate. Is very, very important. So they're not fighting each other, they're all supporting each other. There's not too many flavors on the plate, but the food is taste of what it is.
That's the thing, it can become overly technical, can't it? And you want to go with, as you say, things that perhaps seasonal. People really enjoy going back to that whole seasonal thing, don't they?
Yeah, exactly that. It's you know, you use that word fusion, not to be confused with confusion, which some, you know, I've been to places where there's like too many flavours on the plate and the whole thing doesn't, you know, it gets lost in translation.
Absolutely, that resonates with me. For those of us entertaining at home during the festive season, it's Christmas Day. I remember the first time me and my husband hosted Christmas Day lunch. We produced a great feast, even down to homemade bread sauce, I have, you know, all the trimmings. But we
Wonderful.
Were so exhausted. We were so fraught. We didn't enjoy the experience. We were barely talking to each other by the end of the day, to be perfectly honest. What's your main piece of advice to people cooking roast lunch on Christmas Day? Should you have a plan to follow, or just reach for the sherry and hope for the best?
No, absolutely have a plan. And you should start planning a couple of days ahead. And that's not, you know, people say, well, that's easy for you to say because you're a chef and you, that's what you do. But it's still pretty stressful for me. I've got 18 coming this year. So, you know, on your own to cook for 18. So there's a few tips. Plan ahead and cheat a little bit.
Okay, let's take us through it in stages. If you're going down the traditional turkey route, the pressure's really on here. The route to success is preparation, you've said. So what does that entail? Now, I was thinking, now, what about if you forgot about balancing pots and pans on the hob, filled with all the loads of veg and stuff that you don't have space for? What about roasting them in with your turkey instead? Would that work, for example?
You can do that, but it's... The thing about what I do is it's really organisation. So most people only have one oven. So you've got a roast turkey, you've got a roast potatoes. You know, how do you do that? Because I've got a turkey big enough to feed next door's family and the family, you know, down the road. And I have to get it in the oven by kicking it with my, you know, my boot. I mean, I'm joking, but, you know, most people's turkey takes up most of the oven. You think, well, so it's all about timing. So obviously you've got to get your bird cooked first. Right, so that goes in early.
Right.
And you should time it that the bird is out probably at least an hour and a half before you want to eat it.
Could I then sort of get ahead of time and get the stuffing and the gravy and the pigs in blankets cooked as well?
All of that. All right. of the above. Your sprouts, your carrots, your peas, broccoli, whatever it is you're doing, boil them in salted water. If you're boiling veg, boil them in salted water. Have a big bowl of cold water next to them, and then plunge them into that once they're cooked to stop them cooking. Get them into a serving dish. Bit of melted butter, salt and pepper. Run them through that butter with salt and pepper. Put them into the dish you're going to serve with, cover in cling film, and then you can just heat those through 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes in the microwave.
Oh, brilliant.
Cling film off, they're ready to go.
What about, one other thing I want to ask you, now I don't know if it was Gordon Ramsay who said this some years ago, what about cutting the legs off the turkey and cooking those separately?
Because you can do that. It speeds up the cooking of the bird, because obviously the legs is the thickest bit, and that stops the heat getting to that part of the breast that it's touching. So you can whip the legs off. That turns your turkey into what we call a crown.
Sure.
And a crown cooks a lot quicker. What if you're going to do that, get your butcher to do it. Say, look, can you turn my turkey into a crown, and can you bone the legs out for me? So take the bones out of the legs and get him to tie them. And then you've got two small joints of brown meat, and they'll cook in about an hour and 10, hour and a half maximum. And then your crown, it'll probably take an hour off the cooking of your crown.
What about basting the bird? Butter, oil, both, herbs,
butter.
What?
Butter. Always butter.
Okie doke.
And we put bacon on the top of ours, and then I take the bacon off towards the end so that the skin gets nice and golden brown.
Okay, let's
talk, lots of butter,
let's
salt, pepper.
Roast potatoes. According to Heston Blumenthal, he thinks the most important thing about Christmas dinner, or any roast, in fact, is the roast potatoes. He says you can cook the meat, you can rest it for an hour, as you alluded to. You can cook the veg and reheat when needed. Tick box, you already told us about that.
Yeah.
But when roasties are ready, they're ready. Work out the time you want to eat and how long they'll take, and work everything else around that. Is that sound advice, Tony?
That's really good advice. And parboil them. You need to parboil them. And I think Delia used to scratch hers with a fork. I think you can just shake them in the pan. If you parboil them, it means the outside softens a little bit. And what you need is you need sharp edges.
So that's what
goes crispy.
Oh, yeah. So I know I've seen Jamie Oliver before use a potato masher halfway through the process to kind of break up the surface of the spuds to make them crispy.
If you can break them, or, you know, just get them rough by shaking them in the pan. They kind of get all roughened up around the outside, and that's the bit that's going to go crispy. Goose fat. Buy some goose fat from the supermarket. It's everywhere at the moment. And then get your goose fat hot into your roasting tray in the oven. Let it get hot first, and then very carefully put your potatoes in there. And they're going to need a good hour to an hour and a half. And that's why I'm saying you have them parboiled. You can parboil them in the morning. If my neighbours look out onto my back lawn on Christmas morning, they'll see trays of potatoes steaming, because I get mine parboiled and then put them outside to steam off. So that kind of dries the outside and lets it set. The starch cools down and sets. And then when you put them into the fat, that really starts to crisp up very quickly.
So they don't have to be hot when they go into that hot pan of oil.
They don't.
I never knew that.
So you can do it the day before, you can do it in the morning.
Fabulous. Blimey, that's making me feel loads better. I'm feeling confident already. Christmas lunch is traditionally a meat-laden feast. So in the past, non-meat eaters were basically told there is a vegetarian option, you can get lost. Thankfully, more people are respecting each other's wishes to go meat-free. How, on such a busy day, do you cater for vegetarian and vegan eaters for Christmas lunch?
Okay, so we don't have any in our family. In fact, my sister-in-law tends to not have the turkey, just out of choice. But there's so many other veg and trimmings and all the veg and stuff that... she doesn't struggle there, because I always make loads, feed an army. I once did an Italian loaf of bread. It was like a big dome. I think it's called Pugliese. And in the summertime, we make a beautiful sandwich out of it. We hollow it out and layer roasted vegetables and courgettes and aubergines with balsamic and pesto. And then you press it overnight, and mozzarella in there, and you press it overnight. And then you slice it. We take it on a picnic, slice it, and you've got these lovely layers of colours and beautiful flavours. And that gave me an idea of doing something for vegetarians at Christmas. So we kind of shred the sprouts and wok fry them with some chestnuts, maybe a little bit of sesame oil, and then the carrot and swede crush, and we kind of layer up all these layers. And then stuffing, obviously, sage and onion or lemon and thyme without pork sausage meat in there. Make a vegetarian one or vegan one, and you can put a layer of that in this bread. So you hollow out leave the crust, but take all the bread out of the middle. You can turn the bread into the stuffing and then layer all those vegetables through it. And then you bake that, basting it with honey and butter.
Cool, that sounds really nice.
And then when you slice it, you've got all these lovely layers.
That beats
inside
nut roast.
This crust.
Beats nut roast, which is what we usually go for, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people do that, and because it's quite easy to make a nut roast, but it's quite easy to stuff the bread. And you can use anything, put red cabbage in there. You can all those Christmas flavours. Mm. And it just means that when you're carving the turkey, your vegetarians have something to carve.
Absolutely. That's a good idea. Very good point. Loads of people tell really dark tales of Christmas lunch disasters, stories you can laugh at in retrospect, but it's not quite so easy at the time. If someone is faced with the prospect of a still frozen turkey when they sit down to eat, and I've heard that happen, or Brussels have turned into mush, if the stress of it all is making people reach for another glass of wine, what one bit of advice would you give them to keep it all in perspective, Tony?
Just have some backup. Just have some back. So, on Christmas Day, we have braised red cabbage, We have, I wok my sprouts, I shred them and we wok them. And I put smoked bacon in there, chestnuts, and some dried cranberries, a little bit of soy and some sesame oil as a flavour. We have peas because one of the, Katie's brother only eats peas. We have the carrot and swede crush. We have mashed potatoes. We have roast potatoes. We have lots of stuff. But I cheat. I buy the cauliflower cheese.
Crikey, you buy the cauliflower cheese. That's giving us a licence. That's brilliant.
Life's too short.
Brilliant.
And I have been known to buy the braised cabbage as well, just to save time. And that when I say backup, that means that if you have this stuff and don't use it, you've got it in the fridge and your sprouts go mushy or you burn the carrots or whatever it is, at least you've got something there on hand. If you haven't used it on Christmas Day, there's always Boxing Day.
When you said backup, I thought you meant enlist help from other members in the family or something, but no, you're really going for it.
That's the washing up. That's the clearing up, because what happens is families tend to come and visit you, and without thinking about it, they treat it like a restaurant.
Yeah, they do.
So they sit and wait to be served, and that really stresses you out. So don't be afraid to allocate jobs.
Yeah, ask for help.
So can you, you clear the plates and stack all the cutlery to one side. I'll load the dishwasher. Don't let them load the dishwasher because it'll be a mess. But give them all jobs, allocate them jobs, and don't be afraid to ask because they won't say no on Christmas Day.
And that's the thing.
But if you don't ask, they won't offer.
Yeah, because Christmas is really about sharing time and moments with family and friends. It's not spending the whole time in the kitchen. So
exactly, you don't want to miss out.
Cutting corners, good idea. Having backup, good idea. And I suppose if all else fails, it's just to have a good laugh about it and know that your guests have seen that you've actually made an effort and you've made a meal with love and friendship. That's at its core, really, isn't it, on this day?
Exactly. And the fact that you're all together is key.
Absolutely. Tony, it's a crazy busy time of year, so thank you so much for sparing a moment to give Susie listeners some tips.
My pleasure, and happy Christmas to all your listeners.
Yeah, and I have to say to you, as a caveat, last time you were in the studio, I made you a homemade frangipane tart, and I noticed you managed to avoid being put in that position again by doing a phone interview, so that's a very smart move, Tony. Very good. Very well done.
It was a lovely, lovely tart.
Oh, so you're just saying that. You're just saying
no, it's lovely.
Thank you so much, Tony.
You're welcome.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
That was celebrity chef Tony Tobin. And if you want to listen to that interview again, it will be up on the Susie site in a couple of days' time. Thank you so much for joining us, Tony.